Welcome to the Hornets Hivecast, presented by Charlotte Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat Associates, the official eye, ear, nose, and throat care provider of the Charlotte Hornets. Here's your host, Sam Farber.
Welcome to another edition of the Hornets Hivecast, your Hornets podcast with all the notes, quotes, and daily buzz around your favorite NBA team. I'm Sam Farber, and it is a pleasure and a privilege to have you with us here once again on the Hornets Hivecast, brought to you by Senta, Charlotte Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat Associates, the official eye, ear, nose, and throat care provider of the Charlotte Hornets. It's a post-lottery edition of the HHC. Unfortunately, Hornets didn't have very much luck here this time around. Have had some in the past, moving up to the number three pick a handful of years to go, netting LaMelo Ball. Of course, last season, moving up to the number two pick, where they selected Brandon Miller. Both of those two seem to be pillars of the Hornets, hopefully, playoff future. Perhaps the number six overall pick will have a similar effect after this draft is said and done. Helping us break down the comings and goings of lottery night, he is my producer on the Hornets Radio Network, as well as the producer of this fine podcast, Rob Longo, as well as the senior writer from Hornets.com, Sam Perley. Thank you both for joining me here on a somewhat subdued post-lottery night. I know it would have been fun to move up to number one, but six is not the worst it could have been.
Of course, thank you for having me. And obviously you would like to be higher, but you got to keep it a little bit in perspective. Hornets have had a lot of good luck the last couple lotteries recently, so it all evens out. You control what you can control and you move forward.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Mr. Perley over here as well. Thanks for having me as always, Sam. But yeah, it's a little disappointing that you move back. But again, when you look at it and you look at lottery odds, this is exactly where the Hornets were projected to pick from a probability standpoint. So shouldn't come as much of a surprise, even though that the Hornets had one of the better odds to land a top pick.
Yeah, you're correct there. Both of you are. The Hornets most likely place to have landed was indeed the number six pick. However, the majority of the odds, better than 50% odds, were for them to finish in the top five. Obviously, they don't this time around. So the word of the day, I think, at least to start, is disappointing. Obviously, it's disappointing to fall in the lottery, but the team will have a great opportunity here to add another young piece to its core that features Brandon Miller and LaMelo Ball. And honestly, this is why the Hornets front office and scouting department doesn't just work, a couple of days on the draft. They're working all year long, evaluating prospects. And there are a ton of them out there, even in a draft that not everyone is as high on as, say, last year's that featured Brandon Miller. There's still a ton of confidence both around the NBA as well as in the Hornets building specifically, that as with Brandon Miller last year, Mark Williams the draft before, later on, post-lottery, LaMelo Ball in 2020, once again, Charlotte can land an impact player at number six.
Yeah, for sure. I think you kind of look at the number and yeah, obviously it would be great to get one or two or as high as you could possibly get. But, in the end, you can go through back through drafts year after year after year. There's talent everywhere in the draft, whether it's in the lottery, middle first round, end of the first round, second round, undrafted. If you do your homework and you scout well and you make right decisions and you put together right plan and structure in place going into the draft, I mean, you can find talent anywhere in the draft. Is there an advantageous element to being number one as opposed to number six? Of course. But that's not to say that there's going to be this huge, massive drop-off. I think this draft is a little bit different than maybe in years past, as we've seen. So I think the Hornets are going to get a very, very good player that can contribute to them and what they're currently building in Charlotte.
Rob, we'll get into some of the history of the number six pick and just how good it could end up being if the Hornets really hit a home run here on this pick. But, overall, yeah, you would always prefer to be number one. But anyone who thinks that the sky is falling because you don't have the first overall pick is being extremely short-sighted. Look no further than these playoffs and some of the most dominant players in it, including Jalen Brunson and the Joker. I mean, like, you're talking about players that were drafted in the second round, let alone being available at six overall.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of options here, and there's always going to be draft prospects that are able to either rise or fall. Nikola Jokic was drafted during the middle of a Taco Bell commercial. So it just kind of goes to show you that there's going to be talent up and down the draft. And I think I said this last year, but it's worth repeating again, especially these days now where the talent is just so wide, not even across the United States and the traditional markets, but across the globe as well. I mean, basketball is really, truly an international game. I mean, you look at the top several picks that are projected to go top five, and a lot of them are international players. And I know that some people were kind of scared of the international players maybe 15, 20 years ago, but now it's a completely different ballgame. The talent pool is just so wide, And there's just so much to draft and so much to really scout that sometimes it's hard to find those guys that end up falling to the second round, like a Nikola Jokic. And I mean, even Alperen Şengün a couple of years ago as well, who has been an international talent, has really risen to those kind of levels. I mean, Luka Doncic, I mean, the list goes on and on. And all of those guys were not top three picks. So, I mean, there's the ability to go out there and find talent at 5, 6, and 7. I mean, it's a very talent-rich draft, as it always will be. And I know that we've had the discussions personally between you and me in the past where we talk about depth in a draft and how it might not be there. But like you talk about it, you're the numbers guy here. There's always going to be at least 2 to 3 all-stars in every single draft. It's just a matter of going out and finding them. So even though it's a number 6 overall pick and it's not the first overall pick, you don't get to control the draft, but you still get to pick pretty darn high. And it's an opportunity to add to this young talent here in Charlotte.
So how good might it be picking 6th overall? We're going to go through some of the history that comes with this selection in the draft and talk about the long list of players in Hornets franchise history who've been selected with a 6th overall pick. That was Sam Perley's homework assignment. We'll get into that next segment right here on the Hornets Hivecast. Sam Farber, Sam Perley, Rob Longo here with you on the HHC. We are post-lottery now. The Hornets are locked in. They'll have the number 6 pick in next month's NBA draft. And while scouting has been going on all year long already to find the next potential star for the Charlotte Hornets, they'll really be able to focus in on players that will most likely be available and they will most likely be thinking of selecting at number 6 overall. So again, don't fret Buzz City. That's the message we're trying to relay here. Another top 6 pick is on the way here to Charlotte. That's going to go along with everything else new in the last 13 months in the Queen City, like a new ownership group, new head coach in Charles Lee, a newly reimagined Spectrum Center that is currently under development right now and has us kicked out of the building and doing these podcasts in a more remote fashion now. There's also, of course, the new front office tasked with finding another strong player, maybe a superstar at number 6. It has happened before, and hopefully Jeff Peterson can have it happen again. Real quick, going to Sam Perley, I mentioned at the end of the last segment, your homework assignment was to give us the lowdown on every number 6 pick Charlotte has ever made. Sam Perley, what did you find?
Well, believe it or not, this is actually the first time that the Hornets will pick 6th in the draft, assuming they hold on to the pick. They picked in every single spot in the top 10 except 6th, and they have not picked 7th yet either. So now they will pick 6th. But they have picked 8th, 9th, and they also have never picked 10th as well. So if there's something to be said about that, so 6, 7, and 10 coming into the lottery, they had never picked before. They'll cross off one of those numbers. Very interesting. They've had the 11th pick 4 times. They've had the 12th pick a couple times, 13th pick. They've had the 5 pick 3 times, but for some reason, never had that 6th pick. So something I thought was a little bit interesting for sure.
Personally, I'm rooting for them to check 30 off the bingo card next year, but we'll see if we get there for the Charlotte Hornets. So Charlotte's never picked 6th overall, but some of the greats to come off the board at number 6 in the history of the draft include some of the big names in NBA history, current, more recent, and all-time greats. You got Damian Lillard, of course, was a number 6 overall pick. Other Hall of Fame talents like Adrian Dantley, Tommy Heisman, Jerry Lucas, Brandon Roy, Jerry Sloan, Antoine Walker, Lenny Wilkins, and then maybe the greatest of them all from the number 6 position, the great Larry Bird. And then recently, number 6 has been a really, really good position in the last handful of seasons as well. We'll see if Anthony Black ends up making an all-rookie team. Personally, I kind of doubt it, although he did shoot well from 3 over the course of the entirety of the season, and his team did make a major jump, the Magic did, into the playoffs with him in the starting lineup almost half of the season. But if he does make an all-rookie selection, he'll extend a nice run for the number 6 overall pick. Benedict Mathurin of Indiana made the all-rookie team from number 6 last season, and Josh Giddey did the same the year prior for OKC. So we've got long-term history and short-term history that says number 6 is a really good place to get a really good player, maybe an all-time great added into your franchise, Rob.
Yeah, it's absolutely a great spot. I mean, anytime I think you pick in the top 10, you're basically not quite set for a lock at a quality player or franchise-altering player, but it gives you a great opportunity to certainly do so as long as everybody does their homework involved. But I mean, the recent history looks good. The past history looks good as well. I mean, some of these guys on these lists too, I mean, they're ones that I feel like didn't get a ton of look at maybe like a top three or a top four pick, because I think the consensus with this draft too, and we can't really get into names obviously or anything like that, because we all like to keep our jobs and we won't want to get filed for tampering with the league office, but there's not really a consensus number one overall pick in this draft for the most part compared to last year with Victor Wembanyama, and then the conversation kind of came down to two and three about who the Hornets would take obviously. So I feel like there's a little bit of shuffling here where you almost have to kind of pick and choose your spots a little bit if you're a general manager, because there's so many unknown factors here on what the first five teams in front of you are going to do. And I know we'll get into that a little bit here later on in our next segment. But again, this is still a very advantageous spot picking in the top six. I mean, just some of the names out there. I mean, Damian Lillard's the biggest one that stands out. Nerlens Noel has had a good NBA career. Marcus Smart, Buddy Hield. I mean, these are names that are pretty solidified in the association. Then you got other guys like Benedict Mathurin, who I think has the potential to be a really, really good player as well. Anthony Black showed some flashes for the Magic here as well. Josh Giddey, we know what he's seen from him with Oklahoma City over the last couple of seasons now. So there is a lot of promise in this top six pick with this six overall pick. And again, it's just coming out and doing your homework and making sure you get the best guy that's available.
Well, before we talk strategy, how maybe the Hornets should approach this draft now that they know where they're selecting sixth overall, there is one other element of lottery night that I don't think we can avoid, so we might as well touch on it, and that's the rest of the results. How does this impact Charlotte? How do we feel as members of the Hornets organization? How should the fans feel about the fact that two division rivals rose to the very top of the draft? Atlanta won the lottery. They'll pick first. Washington is going to pick second overall. I guess for the Wizards, it's not a huge shock. They did, after all, have the second worst record in the NBA. Oh, woe are the Detroit Pistons. Back-to-back years with the very worst record in the NBA. The odds were about 1-4, actually a little bit better than that, more like 1-5, that they would entirely miss the top four in back-to-back seasons. And lo and behold, they did. So two straight years of the worst record in the NBA. And what do they have to show for it? Number five overall, which is a good place to draft if you're looking for great talent, but it's certainly not number one. So I think if you're a Hornets fan, you feel better for your luck than certainly the Pistons have. But Washington, second worst record in the NBA, they will be picking number two. Atlanta jumps from number 10 to number one. That could be a bit more frustrating, I can imagine, for fans out there. It is what it is. The ping pong balls bounce the way they do. But Sam Perley, how would you maybe assuage fans out there who are feeling some kind of way about the fact that the Hornets slipped a little bit to number six and the Hawks ascended to number one?
Yeah, well, I think they said before the lottery that the Hawks had never won the draft lottery. So maybe it was time, or maybe they hadn't won it since they redid the odds or started weighting the odds or something like that. So it's just one of those things. It's like, you know, it's, you just have no control over it. And then it's almost kind of a relief once it's done, because it's okay, now you have the sixth pick. Now you can kind of move forward. You've got a little bit of an idea how the board is going to play out a little bit, and you can kind of start strategizing a little bit. But it's obvious as a Hornets fan, you don't want to see, you know, two teams like Atlanta, and particularly Atlanta and Washington, move up into the top two. But to touch on a couple teams that had a much, much worse coming away from the lottery, you mentioned the Pistons. They are 102 games under 500 combined the past 2 years. They've had the fifth pick both times. Another team that lost their pick, actually Toronto, had a top six protected pick from Jakob Poeltl trade last year. They got jumped not once but twice and lost their pick, so it just completely went away to the Spurs and ended up I think eighth. And then another team that probably not as much of a salty feeling, but the Houston pick that actually jumped up to third, that pick originally belonged to Brooklyn from the James Harden deal in January of 2021. That is not actually Houston's pick. Houston's pick went to Oklahoma City at 12th from the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook deal. So if you're Brooklyn, you're looking at that thinking that's the third overall pick that we would really love to have right now. That was a six spot jump. It's a little disappointing for the Hornets, but there are a few teams that you look and you're like, I'm really glad I'm not in their position, because I'd be feeling a whole lot worse, most especially Brooklyn, Detroit, and Toronto.
Well, there you have it. I think there's a lot of reasons to feel positive about where Charlotte is right now, but in case you need an extra one, there's other people that are feeling a lot worse than the Hornets too at this moment in time. The Hornets have the advantage of knowing where they're going to draft. It's number six overall. And there are some intricacies about this draft in particular that I personally think makes number six a very advantageous spot to be in. We'll talk about that next as we continue to break down this post-lottery edition of the Hornets Hivecast. Sam Farber, Rob Longo, Sam Perley here with you on the HHC. Thanks for joining us. Another off-season edition, a post-lottery edition. Our apologies for any technical changes. We are out of our studio as Spectrum Center is being reimagined right now, but don't worry about it. Once we get to the fall, we've been assured we will get our studio back and we'll be ready for the 24-25 season with a brand new toy, hopefully, in the locker room in the number six pick. I guess, you know, you have to always throw in the caveat that Sam Perley threw in earlier that you never know. There could be trades. There could be some kind of move. But as it sits right now, if Charlotte drafts where they are currently penciled in, they will have the sixth overall pick and add that to a very talented group of Hornets that hopefully will have better luck health-wise on their side this season. Gentlemen, this is going to be my mantra for most of this next month, this draft season, and that is this is an eye of the beholder kind of draft, which makes it feel to me like it's an advantageous one here for the Hornets. Universally, it has not been labeled as a tremendous draft. In my opinion, I think that's a little bit of laziness from some of the experts out there. It's an easy thing to say, well, I don't see Brandon Miller or Victor Wembanyama or Michael Jordan, so I'm going to say this isn't as strong of a draft and cover my rear end when the guy I like is number one as an analyst gets picked, you know, outside the top 10, or I'll cover myself as a scout or an executive when the guy I like and pick in whatever position I'm in ends up not working out. But the reality is what Rob touched on earlier, and I say it almost every year this time of year, every draft has all-stars in it, multiple, and it's your job to go out there and find them, particularly when you have top three, top five, top 10 picks the way the Hornets do for this upcoming draft.
Yeah, I think there's going to be all-stars in every draft. And I think I read a stat earlier today, and this is really poor, but I can't remember who it was, I was just kind of scrolling through Twitter as the lottery was about to begin. There's something like, I think every draft or nearly every draft for the past like 20 to 30 years has produced at least three all-stars in some capacity. They're not all necessarily in the lottery, but three is generally the kind of average number of all-stars per draft too. So it's just about doing your due diligence, you know, finding the, you know, is it fit versus talent versus best available? I mean, there's so many different factors to kind of weigh, you know, when you're making the selection, and so much it comes down to who's already on your team, the environment, coaching style, things of that nature. So I think the process is really fun. Not only, you know, seeing how the Hornets are going to kind of go about this, but, you know, other teams as well, how they look to make their teams better. And you know, everybody up on that stage today, you know, for the most part, except for Oklahoma City, you know, had probably what they would consider a disappointing season. So everybody's going to be attacking this draft process, you know, really aggressively. You know, starts with the combine later on this week and pro days, and then, you know, quickly gets into draft workouts over the next several weeks. So I think this is an exciting time of year, and, you know, there's always going to be guys, you know, whether it's in the lottery or end of the first round, middle first round, second round, even unsigned, undrafted guys that are going to hit. And, you know, it's, you know, up to the teams to kind of do their due diligence and find those guys, because those are the ones you kind of, you know, you can take the next step with. You look at New York, you look at all these teams that are in the playoffs right now, Indiana, there's a bunch of those guys that are not. I think New York says something like their starting rotation is all non-lottery picks or something, or it went fully healthy. So it's an exciting process. And I think the Hornets are in really, really good shape to make a step forward in the next several weeks with this draft.
Rob, there's a couple elements of what Sam talked about that I wanted to kind of flesh out a little bit more here. One is the thought that, again, we keep repeating it, there are multiple all-stars in every draft. If you think you have one in your sights, you go get them. As every team will do, the Hornets are going to grade out every player. They're going to, you know, approach this as if they were picking first, second, third, fourth, all the way up and down. They're going to create their big board. And if you have a guy in your number one or two position, you go get that person because you believe that's an all-star, regardless of position. At least that's my mantra on it. If you get into things that are tiebreakers, then I think you can start looking for fit. But I think historically, when we see franchises get themselves into trouble, around the draft. It's when you pass on someone that you think might be more talented because you're afraid of doubling up on a position or afraid that they won't fit well with what you already have. When you're picking this high in the draft, if you think you have an all-star level talent, you add them in, because one thing about all-stars, they all seem to figure out how to play well with one another. So in certain respects, this being an eye of the beholder draft, I think for me, in my perspective, there's more cover to go out there and identify that guy you think is that all-star talent and not have the distraction of a national or nowadays international hype machine saying, oh, wait a minute, you can't take that guy. You're supposed to take this one over here because we graded him out a little bit higher. We'll see how it works out, but I doubt there's going to be a ton of pressure to select someone specific at number six, because the experts right now don't seem to have a consensus on number one, let alone the rest of the top 10.
And that's why I think you can get a lot of value in this draft too, is because everybody kind of has a different perspective right now about who the consensus top, let's just go ahead and say 7-8 guys are. So this is something that you're really going to have to rely on your scouting and your front office to really hone in on some of these guys and realize who the best player available is, because as much as we talk about fit versus best available, there's still a little bit of a fit factor just in general. I mean, this is something that Sam Perley and I talk a lot about on the podcast. Sometimes when we were talking about the second part of the season, where you had guys come in like Grant Williams and Trey Mann and Vasemichus and all those guys that got acquired at the trade deadline, and how so much of the NBA is about fit from that factor. So I'm not saying that you need to fit position-wise, because like you mentioned, Sam, is that's where teams start to get into a little bit of trouble. And I think the biggest glaring obvious one of that in recent memory is 2020, when the Golden State Warriors drafted James Wiseman, who of course is not on the roster anymore. So obviously they weren't going to pick up a guy like LaMelo Ball when you had Steph Curry and a loaded backcourt, and certainly worked out for the Hornets in that sense, as LaMelo fell to three, of course. But in general, I mean, I just think you have to figure out who is going to be the best fit for your team along with that talent. So it's a little bit of a balancing act in that sense. And I'm not saying that you need to go out and draft a certain position to fit that mold, but you need to just make sure that that person is well aligned with your system and what the beliefs are in that team and how it's going to look with the rest of the team. And again, you're not going to pass up on somebody because there's one of those boxes that aren't checked. It's going to have to be multiple for it to be a certain reason to swing one way or the other, but it's going to be a little bit of an everything factor. And again, going back to my first point, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here in the next couple of weeks and over the next month, because there isn't that consensus top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pick. So there's a lot of wiggle room here, and it's going to be a lot of work for the front office, for the Hornets, I'm sure, and for every other team that's picking in that top 10 or so, because we have no idea what's going to happen a month from now. Last year, like we talked about, it's a little bit different. We kind of had a pretty clear idea who the number one overall pick was going to be and who number two and number three were going to be for the most part. And then it got a little bit different from there. But this one is wide open for the most part, and everybody's going to have to do their homework.
Well, just off one thing you said there, Robin, you talked about the LaMelo Ball draft where he fell to the Hornets at three and James Wiseman was the pick at two. And look, James Wiseman was a very highly regarded prospect. There were plenty of mock drafts that had him going number one that year ahead of LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards. So it's not to say that that pick was wrong, because, you know, that was not a talented player. It's just turned out very much so that there were other better all-stars available there. And if the pick was made because of redundancy, that's where I get into fear. If you cancel people off your board because they're too short, they duplicate a position you already have, within reason here. I'm not saying you shouldn't break a tie with that, but if you think someone's an all-star just because you currently have someone with that kind of talent on your roster already, I'd encourage you to try and figure it out. And I think there's so many examples, draft after draft after draft, where this is borne out. You know, there's last year, obviously, Wembanyama was the number one overall pick, unanimous rookie of the year, but there was all that conversation of Brandon versus Scoot. Clearly, Hornets seem to have gotten that one right. 2021, there was supposed to be a clear top four in the draft. Scottie Barnes was not supposed to be in it. The Raptors ended up using the fourth pick on him rather than Jalen Suggs, who's become a very, very good player in the league. I'm not knocking him at all. But Barnes, to at that point, the expert surprise, I might say, ended up being the rookie of the year, and he's already an all-star. 2018, DeAndre Ayton went number one. Luka Doncic ended up falling. 2017, Markelle Fultz was the number one overall pick over Jason Tatum. Heck, Michael Jordan didn't go number one overall. So long story short here, I'm good not having the pressure of the draft experts. I want Jeff Peterson and his team to make this pick with confidence, Find your all-star. Find the guy you think is the best, most likely player to be a X factor, to be a change maker here for the city of Charlotte, and go get him. And whatever the experts draft board says, be damned.
Yeah, I think I agree with both you guys. I mean, the only thing I would add to follow up, you know, and I'm sure this will not be the last discussion. It's kind of the annual thing that you hear a lot this year, drafting for fit, drafting for need. With the Hornets situation, I think you got to draft the best player available, draft, you know, the most talented player, whoever you have is the highest on the board, and then you can figure it out. Obviously, coming off a 21 win season, which I don't necessarily think is indicative of the talent level when healthy. I think we can all agree to that. But the Hornets need to add more and more talent. And with the NBA becoming so positionless and so much switching and different lineups and things like that, I mean, you don't have guys set in one specific shooting guard, point guard, you know, small forward, power forward, things like that. I mean, guys are doing all sorts of different things with the spacing. And, the only thing I think with the fit is if you are going to draft a player that maybe you will have a little bit of a redundancy of, you have to know how you're going to help him develop if there is, you know, a situation. Okay, we're going to draft this guy, but, you know, there's a player at his position in front of him. What is the plan? How do we envision using this guy? How do we envision developing him? Because I think sometimes you'll see in years past, and teams will draft the best player available, even though they've already drafted a player. I think the first example that comes to mind just personally is when the Pistons took Cade Cunningham, and then they took Jaden Ivey the next year in 2021 and 2022. They drafted two, you know, point guard / shooting guards, and I think that was the best player available on the board, but it's still kind of, it didn't necessarily feel like they had the best plan and how to develop both of them at the same time and the kind of roles they were going to take. So again, I think it's like Rob said, this, I think this whole process is kind of wide open. I think that's what makes it really, really exciting. Not to say last year was anticlimactic, but we did have a good feeling of who it was going to be out of those top two guys. So this one will definitely be a little bit different, and I'm excited to kind of start reading as much as I can and you know, continuing to learn about these guys and go through the process. So it should be really, really fun next couple of weeks.
Same for all of us, no doubt about it. It's going to be a fun few weeks here, roughly a month until draft night. And of course, we will have it all covered for you here on the HHC. We'll do our best to duplicate some of the conversations we had a year ago looking at this overall draft class and some of the advantages that might lie within here for the Charlotte Hornets. We know where they're picking. They're picking sixth overall. It'll be the first time in Hornets franchise history, and hopefully they'll get someone on the caliber of some of the all-time greats that have gone sixth overall, like Damian Lillard and Larry Bird. Rob Longo, Sam Perley, thanks so much for joining me here on a post-lottery edition of the Hornets Hivecast.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure as always.
And thanks to all of you for joining in as well. For everybody here, I'm Sam Farber saying it's been a pleasure and a privilege having you along. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Hornets Hivecast.
Thank you for listening to the Hornets Hivecast, brought to you by Senta, the official eye, ear, nose, and throat care provider of the Charlotte Hornets. For more coverage, visit Hornets.com.